Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of the show. Today I'm joined by Dutch filmmaker Laura Tarnbeek. Laura, welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm doing well. It's really warm, but other than that, really good.
And you're joining all the way virtually from Holland. You're back in Holland at the moment.
Yes, true. I've been here for about 4.5 months. I expected to go for like 2 weeks a month, and it turned out to be, well,
forever.
Almost half a year. Yeah.
Forever. So I'm really keen to get people on and just talk a little bit about their origin story, for lack of a better term. So maybe you can just, in a Cliff Notes way, give a little bit about who you are and I guess what inspired you to get into the whole kind of filmmaking world. How did you traverse your way from Holland to then being in the UK, all that stuff?
Yes, so I did my BA in audiovisual media, which is basically filmmaking. And I did that in the Netherlands at the School of the Arts. And I've always had some fascination with British cinema. And I thought, you know, I might want to live there. I did an internship in London at a production company. And, you know, and I thought, okay, let's see what film schools are out there. So then I found out about the Northern Film School. And I was like, yeah, I'd like to do my master's here. So I did. And I still live in Leeds. So, and I graduated 2015, so it's a while.
And now you're producing. Was it an obvious choice to fall in? Well, directing too, but was it an obvious choice to fall into the more creative side of it as opposed to the more technical, say, DOP editing kind of side? And how did you kind of know?
Just because I don't think of myself as very technical, and I'm not saying it can't be learned, but I like the directing part. I like the producing part. I like being creative, and not, I mean, the other roles are definitely creative, so I don't want to say that, but I just felt like working with actors, for example, is one of the things that I love most.
Oof. And really careful now. I know. we're weird. I don't know if you want to put that out.
I know that, but I don't want to get into that. So yeah, so that's kind of how I chose to do that. And then I was always in the directing. I always thought I wanted to be a director and only a director. And then at the Northern Film School, I learned much more about producing, and I realized that that's actually a lot of fun. And I thought, I want to do both. And I feel like often you're kind of told, not at the film school, but just generally in the film world, like, okay, you choose one path and, you know, and you follow that. And that's kind of what I had in mind for a while. But then I realized I want to do so many things. So why not? Like, why not just do everything that I'm interested in?
Life's too short. Exactly. I think it's interesting. I've spoken to a few people, and I think if you go back 5 or 10 years, maybe 10, it was more common to hear people say, like, stay in your lane. Like, just do one thing and sort of that's it. And I think more and more over time, it's been more not just accepted, but almost revered in some ways, that you can be a hybrid. You can be a writer, director, an actor, writer, whatever, producer, because I don't know what else a producer do. but that's more accepted now than before. And I think it makes sense. Like,
yeah.
You have more appreciation of the other skill sets, and you can get more stuff done of your own.
Exactly. And I've produced an independent feature with for my colleague. She directed it, and it's part of her PhD, and it was supposed to be a short film, but it actually turned out to be a feature, and she's going to do another one. And I absolutely loved that that process. And even though I still, like, I direct my own stuff, but I also want to continue in producing and in writing. And I realized I like to write with people rather than just alone. So I found screenwriters around me, and, you know, you just think about who you want to work with. And then, you know, on every project is different, and you can, so I like producing with one person, like writing with another person. And I like, you know, working with so many people in so many capacities, and I don't want to, like, tie myself down to one thing.
Yeah, I think it does. No, I get it. I mean, I think everybody finds their core sort of tribe of people. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that you don't work with other people outside of that. It's that there is that core group you can always go back to brainstorm with or to get something off the ground with. And if you look at even the big players in the industry, they all kind of have their favorites.
Yeah.
You know, like some big directors always work with the same casting person. There's always the same kind of producer, director, or actor combo that they knew each other from when they were like, you know, growing up and going through the industry. And I think that's equally important to have people that you can work with now, not just trying to find people that you want to work with because they're like, you know, so far ahead of you.
Exactly. I've got one of my best friends. He is a DOP, and we went to film school in the Netherlands together. So we've known each other for about 10 years. And we did our graduation film together there. And then I went on to do my MA at the film school, and I met other people and worked with them. But then 2 years ago, I shot another short fiction film with my DOP friend. And then a few weeks ago, we did a lockdown film. So, you know, we will always keep working together. And we've kind of grown together, which is really nice, you know. And we know how we work and can be really honest with each other, because I think that's really important as well, that you can just, that you have such a working relationship that you can just say, okay, this doesn't work. Let's do something else, and don't have to like walk on eggshells around each other.
Yeah, it's a big commitment, right? It's like it's a relationship, really.
Yeah, it is.
You have to be authentic in a relationship, no matter what type of one it is. So if you can't talk candidly, then the end result's going to be a very disturbed child, should we say? So going to the producing side, just to flip back to that. You mentioned, obviously, you sort of went in to do the MA, focusing more on directing, and then sort of not found producing, but sort of fell in love with it a little bit there. What was your idea of what producing maybe was before that, and how did it change? Like, did you have a different perception of what a producer was, maybe?
I think so. Even though I did learn, you know, during my BA, I did learn a lot about it, but I never thought of it as much as a creative role as mm-hmm. I then found out it was, because it really is creative. And I mean, there's so many different roles in producing as well, but I realized that I really loved it. And I don't want to direct and produce my own projects, for example, because I would like to either be producer on someone's project who's director, or I would like to have a producer on project that I'm directing, because it's really good to have someone else for that and to have that relationship. And it's a big job, well, both of it, producing and directing, so I wouldn't want it to do it together on one project, basically.
And also, I guess if there's no one else to bounce the ideas off, you don't really have anybody to tell you whether it's going in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you really need that, I think.
So were you thinking that it was probably, I guess, more sort of just money and finance and funding and organizational based, which I think is what most people...
Yeah, that was a bit more what I was thinking. And yeah, of course, it's a part of it, but there's so much more to it.
Sure.
And I always kind of thought, oh, I'm not good at that. But then I realized, actually, I'm not that bad. So, you know, you learn and you get confidence in film school when you learn new things.
Yeah. What's your process then with that from a producing side? So say someone comes to you, they find out about you, they reach out with a project, and it's, you know, early stages. How do you like to be approached? How do you like to get involved with the project, and sort of what's the process that you normally look to undertake?
Well, that's a good question, because I actually haven't really produced anything yet from people that I don't know yet, or that have, you know, come to me from the outside. But my friend and colleague Gabrielle Russell, she is doing a PhD and is directing films, and then I got involved as a producer, and you know, that kind of grew like that.
But she must have approached you and said, like,
yeah, but we know each other as colleagues from film school as well. So it wasn't like a stranger approaching me. It's what it's worth.
Sure.
And I just set up my own production company, and I'm going to be making a web series. So I actually put a call out for writers and directors because I want to produce that. And then, you know, that way I'm trying to get people in touch with me.
Just gotcha.
Putting out a brief and saying, like, we're looking for this. So, yeah, I've mostly done it in those ways until now. Yeah.
And do you have like an idea of the kind of vibe or tone or genres that you feel or what you want to make, or are you kind of figuring that out as you go along?
I'm still figuring it out. I mean, I have made a lot of films with kids in it.
Okay.
which
that's crazy. There's all the restrictions around like working with kids as well. You're braver than I am.
I know, my last film had
five kids.
No, four. Sorry, four.
Did you film out of school time, I guess?
Yeah, that was in August 2018.
I don't even know when that was anymore. That seems like...
It's ages ago.
Time doesn't exist anymore.
I know.
Quick on that then. For people that don't know, I think most people might, but just around that topic of working with kids on a film set, there's a lot of things that you might not know about until you get into the nitty-gritty, like logistics, hours, all that stuff. What were some of the things you found out about in that process of things you had to take care of legally and process wise that you think people might not maybe know?
Them needing private toilets, like their own toilets.
Really?
Yeah. Although they weren't as strict on that, and because we were using not our own facilities, but we were filming on the beach and we're using cafes nearby, and we had the parents as chaperones, it was a bit, you know, it was fine and they just went with them. But I read about that and I was like, wow, okay, it's interesting. And of course each age has different working hours. So we were like, one of the kids was one. And you know, that wasn't easy, but she was great. And but we only put her, you know, in shot last moment, only when we really needed it. And the other kids were a bit older, but you really have to schedule really well. And because it's also it's about how much time they can spend on set, but then also how much time they can spend like on set and not actually working, and how much time they spend in the green room or actually be on the shoot. So it's, yeah, there's many, many rules.
And then if you're filming in school time, you actually have to find a way to get them tutors and teach them.
Depending on how long the shoot is, you can get a license and get a few, you know, get them, make sure that they can get a few days off. But I think it really depends on which school it is and etc. So I haven't done that myself personally yet, so I don't know.
Maybe your next film should have adults only, or like
probably
or pets. I mean, although pets are expensive to get involved on projects as well.
Yes, I don't think they're as easy to work with either.
Plus kids and animals do upstage like the adult actors. Don't be doing that to us. That's not fair.
No.
That's not cool at all. So the film that you made then, the one with the kids, I saw the trailer, you put it out there. Do you maybe want to talk a little bit about, I guess, the process of creating that and sort of where it's at now and sort of what's happened with it?
Yeah, so it was actually 2 years ago. It was a long time in post-production, so it doesn't even feel that long ago. But it's a short film about a father who takes his four children to Blackpool Beach on the day of their mother's funeral, because he can't handle the situation. So he's like, let's have a fun day out instead. And that obviously doesn't work like that. Mm. And it was written by Melissa Fielding, who was at that time one of my students. And she wrote the story in the first year. And my colleague and friend actually, gave it to me. It was like, I think this is really up your street, possibly because there was four kids in it and she knew I work with kids a lot. But she was like, I think this is like your kind of thing. So I have a read, and then I spoke with Melissa and we worked on it together. But it's her story. Like she wrote that amazing script and she was happy for me to direct it. So I worked with the DOP, Engel, with whom I've worked many times before, and we got a lot of people from the film school, a lot of students on, and they were absolutely amazing. It was such a good crew. And we all went to Blackpool for a few days. You know, we did crowdfunding beforehand, and I put in some of my own money, and it, you know, it's not cheap, obviously, if you have everyone stay over there.
Sure.
And filming on the beach isn't easy either. I can tell you that.
lots of people trying to get a cameo.
Well, no, not even that. It's like suddenly there's like a storm, or like the
light changes.
Light changes was don't get me started on that. That was really, really hard.
And then, so where is it at now? Is it released? Is it out there? Did it do festivals?
Yeah, it is doing festivals. I'm waiting for like. Yeah, I've kind of just started sending it to festivals. So, you know, it takes a while for it to...
There's like a 6-month gap normally.
Yeah, it takes a while.
How are you finding that now? It's interesting with obviously the current situation globally. What's the feel from the festivals, from what you could tell? Are all of them still accepting? Are they aiming to do in-person still? Or is it going to be some that are online? Do you know?
Well, I did get some. Well, I got one email from a festival saying, like, okay, you know, this year we're not going to go ahead. So they gave back the money that I spent on the submission. Yeah. Other festivals, it will be online. That's kind of feel. I from the ones that I know of, it is going ahead, but online, or you know, they're not like fully stopping the festival or submissions.
Are they charging the same fee, or are they reducing it a little bit because it's online only? Do you know?
That's a very good question. I don't know, actually.
Not that, I mean, you could make an argument, I suppose, that online is just as good and maybe more people will even see the film.
True. Yeah. But I don't think they've made those changes, predictions.
Is this your first foray into the whole festival world, or have you done festival stuff before?
I've done it before with my graduation films and with a short film I made after that. And every year I visit Aesthetica, it's like my favorite festival. It's in York. Yeah. I don't know if you've been, but it's a really good film festival.
Yeah.
I've done it before. And I always really love the atmosphere festival, so I'm a bit bummed out that we can't actually go.
You just have to do it on Zoom with like 100 people fighting for like the mic at the same time.
I know.
Because it's always one that people maybe that are first time filmmakers or that maybe don't do that part of it aren't so sure about, because the festival thing obviously is an important way to get your film out there and seen. And, you know, you get into one, it's like a badge of honor in some ways. It's a proof that then you've been accepted and helps to make the next one. What, in your experience, do you think are some of the biggest things that maybe a new person getting into doing their first film festival submission should really consider and be aware of?
Make a plan, really make a plan. Because if you go to Film Freeway and you want to start submitting your film, because Film Freeway is like the main platform that has so many film festivals attached. And it's like online shopping, you know, it's like putting all these festivals in your trolley and then it's like, oh God, this is like £1,000 or something. Yeah. And so make a plan, look at which festivals are, you know, bigger than others, which are the really important ones, but then also really try to think objectively about your film. Like, okay, I can send it to Cannes or to Sundance and it's going to be, you know, really expensive and they get thousands of films. Would my film realistically, would it get in? And then, you know, so you have to look at it objectively and think, am I going to do that or not? Because it's just a lot of money and different festivals like different things. So it's a lot of research, basically. That's
the important, well, they're all important points, but the last one about different festivals have different tastes and like different things. Some, if we're talking short films here, there are short film specific festivals that have multiple programs, but say you go to a, you know, say the Atlanta Film Festival, which is a great one, but it's only got one or two short film programs. There's a lot more competition and a lot less space to get into.
Yeah.
And you know, not every time, you know, getting a rejection doesn't necessarily reflect on the quality of the film, which...
Oh, no, I got so many. It's like... and sometimes your film might be really good, but might just not fit the program that they want to make for that year. You know, they might...
Or they just have a film that's like yours already, exactly. That's already in the program, or they've got someone who's an alumni because they were in a few years ago. And it's just, you know, networking, politics, yeah. Whatever you want.
It's like,
to call
oh, it. We can, with these films, we can make some sort of theme, you know, with all these films together. And that film, it's great, but it doesn't really fit that theme. So we're not going to put it in there.
Sure.
So it's, yeah.
And it's not cheap, like you say. It's 30, 40, 50 bucks on average for a short film. I think features are probably 60.
Depending on the festival, yeah.
Depending on the festival, of course. And so,
I always go for the early bird because it gets way more expensive. So definitely go for the early bird deadline.
Yeah. Do you, how do you go about doing the research then? Do you do that by yourself? Do you get a team? Do you kind of know instinctively? Do you hire companies? Because I know there are companies you can pay a couple of hundred to do it.
Yeah, no, I have worked with a company before and that was great. And they work with the film school. For Canon Floss, I didn't have the kind of money to do that. But I also looked at my older lists from my previous films. And not everything would be suitable for this film, but I do have a lot of overlapping themes often. So I would just be like, okay, which, just starting with that list, which films, which festivals would suit this film? And also, okay, which festivals have actually shown my previous films or awarded my previous films, and then, you know, just sending it back in there. So,
and I guess sometimes you can, you know, reach out to them if they know you and see if they're happy to give you a waiver or a discount, yeah, or yeah, something like that. But we're talking about money here, obviously being again important in the process. And we're not all flush with millions to just make money, make projects off of our money that easily. So how do you go about the process of making your projects, working on films that you're developing, knowing that you don't always want to put in your own cash all the time? Like, how are you looking to move into that space of getting financing, whether it's crowdfunding or whatever other means? What's your current take on that?
It's a good question and I haven't really figured it out yet. Okay. Because well, when I've done crowdfunding a couple of times and it worked quite well, but for me it was mostly with the people around me. I know there are amazing crowdfunding campaigns from people who get, you know, money from strangers, so I'll still have to learn that. But you know, you can't like every 2 years go to your family and friends and be like, hey, I've got another campaign, you know. For example, I'm now creating a web series called Girls with Capes, and I've put a call out for writers, directors, and I'm gonna direct something for it myself as well. And it's like several episodes of 7 minutes, and it's going to be online. So with my producer, we eventually, you know, going to put a package together and try and see if there's companies interested. If we could potentially do product placement. Like my company is really, it's called Green Film Productions, and we're really into sustainable filmmaking. And there is such a thing as green product placement. So, you know, these are all things that we're looking into. We're not going to film until, well, it's way safer to do so. So it will be a while. And we're trying to figure all that out in the process. But I just wanted to start with it. I was like, you know, I don't want to be held back creatively necessarily by not having money right now. I'm just like, let's develop things and then try and...
I think it's important to always have a few things on your slate anyway, because you want to have stuff at different stages that are ready to either be funded or made or just thought about and developed.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if it's not an era where you could film just yet, you still have work you can do to get ready for when that time does come. I guess going back to the crowdfunding point, I don't think you can... It is like a 1 or 2 time deal to ask family and friends. After a while, they're like, you just made one of those. Didn't that make you any money back?
Like, oh God, yeah, no, that's that, no.
That's not how it works, no.
But I can put your name on the credits, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And thank you.
Exactly. But it's a full-time job in some ways, the crowdfunding piece, which is where I was kind of going to go with it, because it's not just make a page, turn it on, and you're done, I think people sometimes imagine that like a magic money fairy shows up.
Definitely not. No. You need to kind of pester people and stay polite at the same time.
And be okay with that. Mm. So for you, is it going to be a case of doing a few different shorts in the web series? Do you have visions of doing a feature of your own?
I do. So I kind of do a couple of things at the same time right now. So I'm developing this web series with, I say my producer, but the producer I work with, Tom, he also did Candy Floss. Mm-hmm. And we've literally just read like all the scripts that we received, and we're talking about which ones we're wanting to get made. And these are all going to be like female-centered stories for the age group between 7 and 17. So kids and young people. Not each story has to be suitable for each age, because, you know, story for someone from 17 is not the same as someone from 7, but it's like a kind of an empowerment series. Mm-hmm. So we're wanting to do like 5 or 6 very short shorts that are very diverse, and we're focusing on that now. And as I said, like getting people, my writers and other directors in as well, because I don't think I'm suitable to tell every story, and I want to, you know, bring other people in to tell their stories. And at the same time, I'm also writing another short, and I've been writing on a feature for ages, which I'm hoping to kind of, you know, continue with. So I've got lots of documents and projects and things that I want to do, and I don't focus on just one thing. I try to do multiple things at the same time. It's not always a great idea, because, you know, it's very busy, but.
Yeah, but I think you have to have different things developing at different stages, because if you leave one unattended to, then it probably wasn't worth your time in the first place, if that
ended up. Yeah, true. Yeah.
So you spoke about, was it Tom, your producer?
Yeah.
That you work with. So what's, obviously now you mentioned him a few times, you work together on a few things. What's the process like and the dynamic of the working relationship there? Why do you feel like that clicks?
So do you mean Tom the producer, or do you mean my DOP?
Who is the producer that you work
Tom.
With?
Yeah, that's yeah. Tom.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking for people that might watch that are trying to understand what's the dynamic and the kind of relationship they may want to foster with the producer, if they're the director, or vice versa, and just trying to give them an understanding of not how it's always supposed to look, but maybe some of the things that are working for you.
Well, when I asked him for Candy Floss, he was still a student at the Northern Film School, and he was a very good student. And I just thought, you know, he'd be great for this. And that was like our first working relationship. And then when I started my company and wanted to do the web series, he was the first one to add that I thought of asking. So we haven't done like that many things together, but we can be very honest with each other and talking about, just look like I do with my DOP, like be straight with each other and say like, okay, I think this is working, this is not working, and not just having to be super polite all the time. And, you know, honesty is the important thing, I think.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Obviously, I guess without that, you wouldn't go back to working with the same person a second time round. Yeah. All right, so film school-wise, let's move to that a little bit, because we spoke a bit about it before we sort of started recording here. And obviously there's a lot of people that have graduated or that are in their second year going into maybe a final year. You're obviously a film school graduate, and, you know, in the past yourself, you know the benefit of that. But it's a bit of a weird time for everybody. But for them, if we think specifically, it's got to be pretty weird, because it's not the most stable industry or the most, let me take that back. It's not the most obvious linear industry to get into. It's not that you do one thing and then another and it automatically means you're going to get whatever outcome. And then with this situation on top of it, it becomes even more unclear. So I guess $1 million question really would be, if you were going to give some advice to, say, a fresh graduate that's just coming out like now, and you put yourself in their shoes, what kind of things do you think would be the best things for them to be focusing on at the moment, like the next, let's say the rest of 2020?
Oh, that's a tough question. Well,
so that's worth $1 million, which I don't have. So if you answer it well, you just get like an IOU on a piece of paper.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I mean, I obviously had that with our graduates this year. I really, really felt for them that they didn't have their showcase screening, their graduation, and they're such wonderful students. I mean, I think every single one of them is just, you know, it's just great and really hardworking. So they don't deserve this, for sure. And I hope they're going to get, you know, the same chances in the industry. But just on that, like, my sister also just graduated on something completely different, and she's really worried about, you know, gaps in her CV. And I said, you know, but everyone now in 2020 is going to have a gap on their CV. So I wouldn't worry too much about that part. I think really trying to keep learning, like screen skills, for example, have a lot of, like, for example, short courses, also free ones, mm-hmm. Getting certifications for things, you know, just doing extra things that you can do, mm-hmm. Like that, depending on what your role is, you know, but you could do that. You can still make a lot of things in lockdown, you know. I'm not saying it's easy, because during a pandemic, you know, your mental health, it's not always going to be very stable. So I don't think it's fair to expect people to make great work, or, you know, write an Oscar-winning script or something during a time like this. But even just doing small practices or exercises with your friends, or just some improv with your housemates, just keep trying things out and making things. I literally just made a short film 2 weeks ago with my DOP friend, and it was just us. And I did the sound. I'm not a soundie at all. I was kind of stuck to him, and I, you know, kept being, you know, pulled back and forward, because I was also sort of the grip and also the director. And it's not the way to do it, but I had so much fun. And I think it's important to just keep the fun in it as well. I'm not expecting to make a masterpiece necessarily, but just keep practicing. This is not really an answer, as in, this is how you're going to make money right now. But,
well, I don't think it's about that. I think it's just take the pressure off a little bit.
Yeah, take the pressure off. That's for sure. No one's going to make their greatest work right now. I mean, a few people might, but it's not, you can't expect it.
Yeah, I think it's more a time, like you say, of learning new things, or brushing up, or whatever. Read, take a course, write something if you're a writer, and don't judge it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Finish, complete Netflix. And I guess, you know, it's a good time to connect with people. Like, for the first time, I think, in ever, the industry feels a little bit more accessible in some ways than perhaps it would have been at full speed, because not everybody is working to the same intensity as they were, because stuff's either completely shut down or super reduced. So there is the chance to pick someone's brain, even if you know, don't know who they are, do some research, and don't ask for like anything back, but maybe just ask for 5 minutes of advice, especially if you're a grad. Like, worst case is they ignore you. Like, and
I mean, before the pandemic, you would just go and ask for a cup of coffee with someone, you know, and I can say, can we have a
Zoom
thing? It's not the same. The people are probably like zoomed out, but if you say just for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, people might be up for it.
I think people might be more up for it than, you just don't know until you try, I guess. Sure. But I think it's, you know, if you're a recent graduate and that's your situation, I think people in the industry can probably relate and empathize, because many have got memories of when they started out. And, you know, none of us had to go through that period during something like this on top of it. So, you know, there might be a surprise there for some of them. What about like second years that are moving into the final year? Because obviously there's going to be a big shift, I guess, for how the classes are done. They're going to be online, I would assume, probably still to be decided with a lot of it. But, you know, like what, a lot of people go to the film school to do their final year film as their main calling card. Like, how do you think that that's something that they might approach for from their mindset? Because who knows in a year?
The students, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure some of them will defer if they can, you know. Right. I mean, it's allowed, and, you know, I'm sure some of them will do that.
Right.
And I don't know the specifics of everything that the film school is going to do. And I don't really dare say it. Well, I know because it changes constantly, you know. But I do know that we're really working hard to make it a really good year, you know, and support the creativity as much as possible. So it sounds a very like politically correct answer, but that's kind of what I know so far. And it's not going to be the same, that's for sure. It's not going to be the same. But everyone's working really hard, and we have a lot of meetings about how are we gonna, you know, give them an amazing year.
Yeah, I think it's I guess more from their perspective as like the student who's probably going like, I don't know, like, how do I feel about this? How should I feel about this? And I don't think there's an answer to that.
No. No. And in the end, they can choose what to do. Not everyone can afford to defer, obviously, but if some people have the option, some people might want it. It will be different. That's
for sure. Suppose for them, it's not that different to the recent grads in some ways, because they're not that far away from becoming a grad, that the same thing applies. Like, you know, you still want to be looking at, when you're not at the school anymore, what you do and build that habit up now, like the reading, the film watching, becoming a student of the game, not just of a course. That sounds really corny out loud.
No.
But, but yeah, I guess there's that side of it too. Poor bastards.
No, I really feel for them.
But then in a year, who knows? It might be a totally different world, and it might be, you know, all safe and they're filming again. We just don't know.
True. Yeah.
So from your perspective, then, we spoke about some of the projects that you're hoping to film. I guess next year is probably you're looking at it realistically.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of, have you had any kind of ideas from what's been happening in the grapevine of how people are approaching, like, working on sets? Do you know of anyone that's tried anything?
Well, I mean, I did a couple of weeks ago, but...
But it's just two of you. It's a little different.
Yeah, it's just two of us. And again, a kid as a main character. I really need to write different scripts.
You need to diversify your scripts.
I know. But... I mean, I've literally just done like the training that Screen Skills put up about coronavirus awareness and stuff like that. And I've heard of a few people here in the Netherlands that have gone back to work and on sets. And I think it's different from in the UK. They'll still need to social distance, but I kind of feel like sometimes you forget. It's not good, but you know, the distance will become smaller and smaller. So it's good to have someone on set who's actually keeping an eye on that. And I don't know. I find it difficult.
It's just you're gonna fall back into old habits in some ways, because some things need two people to be close together. Like, sometimes the grip has to have someone else helping them move a light or do something, or I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
But then, depending on the production, obviously, that probably can't happen. So you might have to think of something else to do.
Yeah.
I mean, productions that have a lot of money, they'll be able to afford, you know, paying people to maybe stay inside for 2 weeks.
That's different. And they're happening. And I think they have the insurance to cover being back up and running, which is different to maybe something new or indie film, which won't get the insurance that easily. Yeah. And I don't think they've figured that out just yet. And without that, it's like, well, you can't really shoot anything at a certain level beyond two people and a kid on a beach. But that's different because that's just experimenting as opposed to a bigger scale. I think once you get to 20, 30, 40 people in a space, that's a different ball game.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get back to stuff. I feel like actors are in for like the biggest guinea pig test because there's no way you can film actors with masks on. So it's like,
that's going to be tough. And you don't want all scripts to be about a pandemic and people having to keep at a distance.
So. I don't think anybody wants to watch something about what's already been their life for the past 5 months.
Yeah, that's true. It's maybe like, a couple of years, people were like, okay, now we can watch it, but now it's like too close to
us. It's like when the whole thing started and Contagion just went nuts on Netflix and everybody was watching it. And you're like, I don't know if that's the best thing for your mindset. Yeah, I didn't watch it. But yeah, it's almost like I don't need to watch a film. I've lived it. Like I don't. Maybe in like 10 years, I spoke to a friend of mine about this. He was like, in maybe 10 years, when we have a better idea of what really happened with all of this, and there's more information and data out, some kind of like Big Short style version.
The
pandemic was. But in 10 years, that's different. Like
we're still living it. It's too soon.
Absolutely. We need distractions. We need comedies. We need dramas about stuff that have nothing to do with pandemics. What happened to a good old like family that's tormented by other family members?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Good old drama. Awesome. Cool. Well, look, I like to wrap these up with 10 sort of quick fire questions. Uh-oh. Have you watched Inside the Actor's Studio? Do you know that show?
Yes, I love that show, but gosh, I'm not prepared for this. Okay.
You get brownie points because half the people that come on are like, I don't know what that show is.
Oh, and I'm
like,
I love it.
I mean, they're not making what to the host.
Not making them anymore. I know.
He passed away, I think 4 or 5 months ago or something.
Yeah. And I don't actually know where I can find all the episodes. I've just watched a few on YouTube, but those questions are always fun.
Legally or illegally? To find the episodes. I don't know.
Some of them are on YouTube.
Are on YouTube, but I don't know where they actually, I don't know if there's a place where they have them all.
I tried to find them. I couldn't.
There was, I think they used to show on like certain channels back in the day in the UK, but being like streamed online anywhere, I don't think anyone's bought the library, which is weird.
Which is weird.
Okay. Yeah, they're good. No, they're good. Like even now, even though it's outdated, like, these are great guests and they have a lot of experience to share. Anyway, I take the 10 questions he asks at the end, which he stole from someone else. So I'm stealing it from him more to just, I mean, I'm saying I'm doing it, so it's fine. So the first question is, what is your favorite word?
Oh, in Dutch or in English?
Oh, that's cheating. all right, you can have one of each. Go on, you can have one of each.
Okay. Favorite word in Dutch is gezellig.
Yes, I thought it would be.
Yes.
Which means? Which means?
Well, you mean it, there's not like a proper translation. That's why I like it. It means like cozy, nice. I don't know. I kind of like swear words in English.
Well, that's a question that comes later.
Oh, okay. That comes later.
Yeah.
Okay. Empathy. I like that word.
Cool.
And the meaning.
What's your least favorite word?
I know a lot of people have already said this probably, but moist is like...
One person has said that actually.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. Not many, but I don't remember who, but I do remember someone else bringing it up and I was a bit like, I was not expecting that, but fair enough.
But yeah, there will be more, but not that I can think of right now.
We'll go with that. The next question is, what turns you on in a creative, spiritual, intellectual kind of a way?
Openness and kindness. Empathy again. And I just had to think about that. There's so many things, actually.
Go with those as your gut ones.
Yeah.
Crazy talk, all of them, to be fair.
Yeah.
What turns you off? The flip side.
arrogance. I hate arrogance. You can be self-confident, that's fine, but arrogance.
Well, there's a difference, I think, big time.
I personally think that if you're self-confident, like you know what your strengths are, but you also kind of know what your weaknesses are and what, you know, what you need to work on. And I think arrogance feels more like, I think I'm good at everything. And I mean, this might not be, you know, actually the difference, but that's what it feels like to me. It's it doesn't feel sincere.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. The next question is, what is your favorite swear word?
Okay, in English, it's fuck.
Good one.
In Dutch, it's good.
Okay.
Which sounds like saying cut on a film set, which is probably why it's my favorite.
Because you're the only one in England that gets to actually have a bit of a giggle about what
it means. Like, stop swearing.
What does it mean in English?
Well, we use it in the same way as you say fuck, but it literally means the C word.
Okay. It's interesting. It's the same in, like, in Spain, you have certain words that you can translate to something very specific in English, but the usage is totally different, or more liberal in some ways.
True, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I only know one swear word or phrase in Dutch. I'm not repeating it.
Oh.
It's not a good one, not a politically correct one either.
Okay.
The next question is, what's your favorite noise or sound?
Oh, yeah.
Was that it?
No, that wasn't it.
That's the bad joke I make every time, because people always make like a noise when I ask that question.
I think the ocean.
Okay.
And voices of people that I love.
What's your least favorite sound or noise? Voices of people that you hate?
Eating noises.
Okay. Well, like people when they're chewing with their mouth open and stuff?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that comes up a few times.
Yeah, no, I hate that.
Yeah. What job or profession other than your own would you most like to attempt?
I would like to do something with the environment.
Makes sense.
Maybe, you know, work for Greenpeace or something. Yeah.
What job or profession would you never want to do under any circumstances?
Anything to do with being a doctor or doing surgery. I mean, I have high respect for people that do, but I'm just like, I look at blood and I'm it's even in films, I can't really handle much of it. So
really?
I wouldn't make a great surgeon. No.
Yeah, you're not any help if you've passed out. No. and your blood pressure's dropped below the patients.
They would need to help me.
Yeah. Final question, a slightly different spin on the way they ask it, but similar vibe. So it's, when it's all said and done, what would you like the story of your life to be?
Oh, I kept thinking about what would I want God to say to me, and now you've just what's the story of my life?
Flipped it a little bit.
So what others would say about me?
What would you like it to be? Like, what kind of legacy or impact would you like to leave?
That I tried lots of different things, but kept following my passions and my interests. And even if not everything worked out, I put my all in it and kept honest to myself.
Oh, awesome. Final little few moments for you, I guess. Anything that you want to promote, plug, where people can find you on the socials, if you're on the socials. And I guess, like, maybe any closing message, I guess, that you think is really maybe important or prevalent that you want to round off with for anyone listening or watching.
Okay. Well, you can follow me on Instagram at the Green Filmmaker, because I talk a lot about sustainable filmmaking as well. And lauratorenbeek.com is my website.
Cool.
And what I want to end with is something that has partly been my insecurity for very long and still is. And that's like, okay, why are some people so much further in the career than I am? You know, am I not on the right path? Do I need to do this way or that way? But you're never too old. It's not too late. And you can just, everyone has their own path. So don't push yourself too much. I mean, push yourself in a positive way, but don't punish yourself, is what I'm trying to say. Things don't go the way you want to.
Yeah, I totally agree. Your journey is your journey, and someone else's is their path to take. And comparing yourself to someone else, like, you don't know really what they're going through or their life, and they don't know yours. And
also celebrate each other's successes. I think that's really important. You know, you can be really excited about other people's successes, and that's equally important.